Alors, pour l'exposé suivant, nous allons écouter Francesco Aurilia, qui enseigne à l'université de Macerata. Ses recherches se concentrent essentiellement en métaphysique analytique, sur l'ontologie analytique, mais aussi en philosophie du langage, en philosophie du temps et en logique. Alors, Francesco est l'auteur de plusieurs monographies, parmi lesquelles je mentionne un ouvrage de 2010 intitulé « Singular Reference, a Descriptivist Approach », qui défend une thèse donc descriptiviste. Francesco dirige actuellement un projet sur l'image scientifique et l'image manifeste du monde, qui est financé par le ministère italien de l'Éducation et de la Recherche. Et je vais donc le laisser parler. Je vous dis avant cela que son exposé s'intitule « Presentism and Moderate Presentism, Motivation and Objections ».
Thank you very much for this invitation. I would like to thank the organizers. I'm honored to be here in this very prestigious place. So without further ado, let me start with a preview of what I want to do. So in the first part, I shall introduce with some initial motivation a certain version of presentism. Moderate presentism, as I call it, which appears to make some concession to eternalism. It's interesting that such an unpopular view as presentism is subject to... It is supported by a minority, but so many people criticize it. It's quite interesting. We have just seen a criticism of it, but nevertheless, I'll try to defend it now. So in the second part, I shall specify moderate presentism more precisely. I will distinguish it from other positions with which it could be confused. And I shall highlight why I think presentism, why it is presentism rather than eternalism, really, despite these concessions. Then, in the part three, I shall consider the main assets of presentism, why it has advantages over eternalism, and I shall explain why these advantages are preserved in moderate presentism. In particular, I shall focus on an argument for the either moral or existential desirability of presentism, and I will show that it works just as well for modern presentism. There is no difference, really. And then I don't know if I will have time for this. We'll see in part four. I shall consider some traditional objections to presentism and show how moderate presentism can address them. I had promised to discuss some new objection by Mark Thule, by Leninger, but I don't think I will have time for that. Okay, so let me move to part one. So let me introduce moderate presentism. So according to standard or typical presentism, as we may call it, so all things are present, and therefore there are no past and future things. And in contrast, the eternalist says that the past and future are as real as the present, and so there are past, present, and future things. Okay, moderate presentism is moderate in the following sense. I mean, it says that all events are present. So it focuses on events. But in some sense, there are past objects, which I call, following Williamson, ex-concrete objects, or perhaps even future, not yet concrete objects. I'm not that sure about that. I mean, it's a more complicated issue, which I shall neglect. And there are also past and future moments in some sense. Past and future in the sense that they precede or follow the present moment. Here is a reference to a paper in which I present this view in my philosophical studies. There are, as we know, many versions of Prestatis, they have been somehow evoked even in preceding talks, like Lucretianism, Ersatzism, Excitism, and in this zoo there is also moderate presentism, which really is two main features: substantialism about times and ex-concretism, ex-concrete objects. Now, typically, presentism is motivated by its being in line with common sense, and of course this question arises: do we still have common sense in these versions of presentism? It seems like they, because of what they introduce in order to face the truth-making problems, mainly, in order to face this problem, they appeal to different proxies, we may say, of past events. And by doing this in different ways, these versions of presentism make presentism appear more distant from common sense that it might seem at first glance, because these entities are very strange, these proxy entities, like ersatz times, excitis, Lucretian properties, Lucretian tensed properties, or in my case, substantial times and ex-concrete objects. Now, I would like to claim and argue that moderate presentism fares as rather well as far as alignment with common sense is concerned. Rather well, after all, despite appearances. I think substantialism about time is really Newton's view of absolute time, I would say. I found this interesting quote in Bolzano, in The Paradoxes of Infinity, which I think explains rather well what this point of view is, really is. Time itself, says Bolzano, is that whole to which all instants belong, and each finite time, that is every interval in between two instants, is the aggregate of all those instants that lie between those two bounding instants. And I think I would add that this whole is a sequence, we may say, because all the instants are ordered by the earlier or later relation. And I think this is not so distant from common sense, after all. I mean, it's not that the layman in the street would say these things, but somehow implicitly, I think, it is assumed in our commonsensical frameworks. And in fact, I think dates can be taken at face value as denoting times. I think we do take them that way. I mean, the dates are not terms like the winged horse. We took them as denoting something. And the obvious thing is to say that what they do is denoting times in this hall of which Bolzano is talking. Another thing is that I think by having this absolute time understood in this way, we can say the intuition, which I think we do have it pre-theoretically, that in a sense time can freeze, so to speak, in the sense that nothing changes for a while. I mean, we need substantialist time to have this intuition. As concrete objects, and with this name, seem really arcane, far from common sense. So this terminology, which I borrow from Williamson, really may induce the impression that we are getting away from common sense. But I think we must focus on the fact that we capture this commonsensical intuition. So we do say that Socrates is a referring term. We take it for granted that Socrates is a referring term. In that Socrates existed, and this is very different from volcano, which we take to be non-referring, right? Or the planet volcano, or the winged horse, I mean, which is non-referring. So there is a difference, even if Socrates no longer exists, we say. So moreover, we can still say true things about Socrates. For example, that he was a philosopher, that he was a philosopher, and that he is admired, present tense. And we say these things even though we agree that Socrates is not somewhere anymore. He was somewhere. This is why the Williamson terminology, I think, is appropriate after all. It was somewhere, but it's not somewhere anymore. Okay, now let me give you some reasons why I think that this is a form of presentism, after all, despite these concessions. I'm going to say something probably moot, but let me try to say them anyway. Now, let's consider this assertion. Let's consider a certain time t, which precedes the present moment. So I want to say that this time t is past in the following sense only. It's past because it precedes the present moment. In this sense, it is not present. So it seems like I am admitting a past entity. So it seems it is not present anymore. But I think we can also say that in another sense, this time t is present because this this state of affair, I mean, the time t precedings now, somehow occurs at the present moment, I would say. So in this sense, it is also present. I mean, I'm using really the word present in two senses. And of course, we can say the same things about future moments and all other past moments. So in this sense, it is analogous to to assertion number two, like two is a prime number. I mean, the present may say that this state of affair occurs at the present moment. Okay, so in a sense, even number two is a present entity in this sense. Okay, do we have a problem perhaps? If past time t is present in this sense that I explained, isn't it simultaneous with the present moment? And if so, it cannot also be earlier than the present moment. But the reply is that the notion of simultaneity should not be applied to times, but to events which are simultaneous, if and only if they occur at the same time. And similarly, if we admitted past events, we could say that an event E prime is earlier than another event. E1 is earlier than another event E2, in that the time at which E1 occurs precedes the time at which E2 occurs. In moderate presentism, we do not really have these past events, but we can say that there is an event of, for example, X having been F at time T prime, which is, in a sense, earlier than an event such as Y having been G at time T2. And this is so if and only if T primes, T1 precedes T2. As I have already evoked now in this example, the appeal to past tense properties, which I want to make in moderate presentism. The idea is that once an object is F, so is the property of being F at the present moment, this at the present moment T, let's call it T, this determines the object's having a past tense property at later moments. So a property such as having been F at time T. So and this kind of state of affair with a past tense property will continue to exist at all future moments. So, and it's important to note that this sort of state of affair involving a past tense property like X having been F at T should not be understood as something like this. X being F at time T and T precedes the present moment, because you see, number 1A seems to commit us to a past event existing at an earlier time, which is precisely what I want to deny. I don't think there aren't past events located at preceding times. Otherwise, really wouldn't be present as many more. But we may instead say that having been is a past tense copular exemplification, let's call it PE, linking a certain object X, a property F, and a certain time T, so that we have the following fact occurring at the present moment. I mean, we may represent it as 1B. So this past exemplification links the property F, the object X, time T, by virtue of there having been a certain event in the past, which no longer exists. Now let's consider some rival theories, which have similarities, like eternalism of the B-theoretical variety, like the moving spotlight theory, Williamson permanentism, which is somehow presented in his paper Necessary Existence and in his book Modal Logic as Metaphysics. And then there is also Megan Sullivan's minimal A theory, as she calls it, defended in philosophical studies in 2012 and also in her PhD thesis, 2011. So there are analogies and differences. So in eternalism, past and future objects and events are located at past and future times, which is precisely what I deny. So I don't admit such past and future object in this sense. So this is a clear-cut difference. So in moving spotlight theory, there is the event of Caesar crossing the Rubicon as located at a certain past time, at which Caesar is also located, which seems to imply perdurantism, really. So in modern presentism, in contrast, there are no such past and future events. Past and future objects are all located at the present time. In this sense, really, they are present objects. And at the present time, where there is, for example, the event of Caesar's having crossed the Rubicon. So they used the past tense is essential here. Okay. What about Williamson permanentism? Perhaps he admits not only X concrete objects, but perhaps also X concrete events, which is what I won't definitely deny. In fact, here is a quote which he says, from Modal Logic as Metaphysics. Similarly, he says, an event is something before and after it occurs, but perhaps it is concrete only while it is. So he seems to admit also these ex-concrete events. Right. What about times? I mean, are past and future times ex-concrete? I don't know. Perhaps I don't think there is no evidence in Williamson's writing. Are ex-concrete items located at the present time, though not in space? It seems so, I think, and this is like moderate present. This is what he says. Where is the past or future coin now? He answers, nowhere. Right. So we are in the same boat in this respect. But it's hard to answer these questions because according to Williamson, really, the presentist eternalist dispute is to be rejected as ill-founded. He seems to accept the so-called triviality argument against both presentism and eternalism. So he really wants to reject the dispute. How about Megan Sullivan's minimal A theory? So she accepts permanentism. She claims that nothing ceases to exist. In particular, no region of space-time ceases to exist, she says. She also says that concrete objects are endurance and can become ex-concrete. When this happens, they fail to have a spatiotemporal location. She also says only one space-time location, I guess the present one, she's not explicit about this, but I guess she should say that, only one space-time location is filled with objects. And she takes passage to be changed regarding which space-time location is filled with objects. And what about events? Do they also become ex-concrete and fail to have a spatio-temporal location? I mean, there is nothing explicit. My guess is that the answer is yes, but she's not explicit about this, and I want to be very explicit, as I said, about events. So she put space and time together. It's a sort of concession to probably the zeitgeist, perhaps. I want to keep them distinct as they are in Newton. So space and time, I take them to be distinct. Ex-concrete objects do not occupy space, I would say, but are located at the present time. Non-present times, I would say, there are non-present times rather than non-present space-time regions. And such non-present times, I would say, they are empty, so to speak. They are not filled with events. So events just go out of existence. They don't become ex-concrete. They go out of existence. And non-present times are in the present in the sense that they precede in the present time is present, as I said. Okay, so now let me review very quickly what are taken to be the main advantages of presentism. First of all, there is an objective difference of past, present, and future. And I think this is preserved in my approach due to the non-existence of past and future events. There is this epistemological argument. How do we know that we are in the present? Well, if we are present, there is no problem about this. We have knowledge of being in the present. We cannot be wrong, because that is the same in my view. There is an open future, because there are no future events. We can be endurantist or three-dimensionalist, as in typical presentism. Ontological parsimony, I think, is a virtue of presentism. Perhaps it's that we have a little bit less parsimony in modern presentism, because we do have these ex-concrete objects and we have times. But nevertheless, we don't have past and future events. In this sense, we are still more parsimonious than determinist. There is still some alignment with common sense. Of course, even though some work must be done, as I hinted, in order to make that clear. And now let me move to what I call this evil argument for the moral desirability of evil argument for the moral desirability of presentism, which works for both typical presentism and moderate presentism. How much time do we have?
Well, ideally, 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, including discussion?
No.
Okay.
I'm leaving 10 minutes for questions.
Yeah. Okay, so I think I can at least present this, which is... If you want to know more about this, you can look at this paper, which you will find online in a special issue of the Brazilian journal Manuscrito. Here, this is the link. But the first time I sort of hint that this argument is in my book in Italian of 2012. Then there is this argument, this letter paper. And published in Manuscrito. You will find similar ideas in a paper that I recently discovered after I wrote these things by a guy called Mullins, a paper published in this journal, which I usually don't read, Philosophia Christi. But yes, he seems to make a similar point, and so if you are curious, you can also look at that. Okay, no, so let's look at this argument. First of all, let me present this, as I call it, the pro-presentist annihilation argument, which goes as follows. Premise one, P1, absence of sorrow is existentially preferable to occurrence of sorrow. Okay, premise P2, if there were past sorrowful events, then they are part of reality if the world is eternalist. They are not part of reality if the world is presentist. Premise P3, unfortunate premise, there were sorrowful, painful events. Hence, the conclusion, a presentist world is existentially or morally perhaps preferable to an eternalist world. Okay, now, of course, you can object immediately, perhaps it came immediately to your mind that we can construct a parallel argument, which I call the pro-eternalist preservation argument, which goes as follows. Okay, premise E1, occurrence of joy is existentially preferable to absence of joy. Right? If there were past joyful events, then they are part of reality if the world is eternalist. They are not if the world is presentist. But fortunately, there were joyful events, and therefore, an eternalist world is existentially preferable to a presentist world. Okay, so the question arises now, is there any way to choose? Right. Okay, maybe these two arguments are equally powerful, perhaps, but I don't think so. I think there is a way to choose. And I will argue in favor of that with an analogy. Philosophers are fond of powerful demons. We are in the home country of, a philosopher who is famous for having relied on a demon for a mental experiment, right? No, so imagine that with this powerful and eccentric demon that will flip a coin with this intention. Now, if the outcome is crossed, it will bring about that a number of people will enjoy a very, very pleasant experience and that someone will suffer terrible excruciating pain. If the outcome is said, it will do nothing at all. And so what do you hope for, cross or for head? I think most of us prefer that nothing happens because we don't want these guys, poor guys suffering, right? Even though a number of people will enjoy this joy, I mean, this incredible fun experience, okay? So it seems to me that the answer is clear. Perhaps a utilitarian might argue otherwise, but I think it's a minority position. It's like thinking about this guy who suffers. I mean, really, it's something too cruel. So analogously, I think we should claim, by analogy, that the presentist world is better than the eternalist world. I mean, we should seemingly prefer a world in which all past sorrowful events are no part of reality, even if this means that all past joyful events are similarly deleted. Okay, so perhaps there is an analogous, even stronger argument against moral realism, but I will not go into that. Of course, there are a number of objections can be and were formulated against this argument, and in my paper I review this objection and try to reply, but I cannot go into that now. It's another interesting question is whether we can leap from ought to is, and that's of course very, very difficult. I think that paper that I mentioned, published in Philosophia Christi, really by starting from the assumption of a Christian theology, argues in favor of a positive answer, I think, but given that strong presupposition. Otherwise, the jump is difficult, if not impossible. But nevertheless, I think it is interesting to see that we may have a preference for one view. I think it makes us appreciate the ontological difference quite well by focusing on events that involve consciousness. That's the basic point. How much time do I have left?
I would say 5 minutes.
5 minutes?
Yeah, if you can.
Including discussion?
No.
No, okay. So now, okay, good. So I'm going to stop. In this last part, I just wanted to point out, very quickly I can do that, some advantages that we have in modern presentism in addressing standard objections, like truth-making, you know, by appealing to ex-concrete objects and to past tense properties, I can have, I think, rather obvious truth-makers, much better than truth-makers or Lucretianism, for example. So consider this statement: Garibaldi and Vittorio Emanuele II have met in Tiananmen at a certain time, T, let me abbreviate. Okay, the truth-maker would be 1A, the state of affairs consisting of the exemplification by Garibaldi, by the exemplification of a certain relation, okay, a meeting relation, at time t, and this relation is a past tense relation. Let me point this out. It's having met at a certain place. And this is instantiated by Garibaldi, Vittorio Emanuele II, and the place Teano. So people who say, the truth maker must be about the entities that are involved, cannot object any longer, because these entities are still involved. Let me consider cross-temporal relations. You know, with F concrete objects, we have items that intuitively are related. For example, we may say that when Socrates refers to Socrates, really involves a relationship between a linguistic item and an object. Or Trump is taller than Napoleon, it involves two relata, which are still with us, so to speak, and so on. With causality we have a more difficult problem, because causality, at least in my view, involves events, and I do not want to admit past events. But nevertheless, there is some elbow room with S concrete objects, because let's consider this example: the impact of the plane on the tower caused the tower's crashing. So we have a crashing moment T and a preceding impact moment. We may say that the causal relation involves these two events: the planes having hit the tower at time t minus 1, and the tower's crashing at time t. And we may say that something like A, these two events, A and B, plus perhaps some energy transfer fact, are the truth maker of the statement 5. And we may even add that if the plane has blown up, and so the standard present is, we have to say that there is no plane any longer. But the modern presentist can say that, you know, there is an next concrete object which is involved in this causation fact. Okay, that's all I want to say.
Thanks a lot.